This is Tailgate Till May. If you love college sports and you like to put a little action on the games, then this is the place for you because I'm your host, Stephen Gorgie, and I love both of those things too. I'm excited to be back for another episode. Today, I'm going to be breaking down everything that went on in week 8 of the college football season. I'm going to be doing things a little bit differently today. I'm recording after each of the major time slots, and then I'm going to piece this together at the end of the night so you can have something when you wake up in the morning before you get ready for your day of NFL football, while you're making breakfast, while you're doing whatever you do on a Sunday morning. You can listen to my voice react to everything that went on in the college football world in week 8. So I'm going to try this out. It's going to be a little bit different than what I've been doing, where I kind of recap the day in whole on Sunday evening. I'm going to go piece by piece here, starting with the noon games. And the big game of the week was in that noon time slot. That was Penn State, Ohio State. Ohio State gets the win 20-12 over Penn State. And Ohio State gets the cover, whether you got it at 4, 4.5, 5, whatever it was. Ohio State covers that spread. I think it closed at 4 most places. And then the under hits as well. So I was able to get it at 52.5 last Sunday. Gave that on Twitter. And you can find me on Twitter at Gorgon Sports. Just a reminder there. I like to give out my early picks on Sunday mornings, afternoons on Twitter, I guess now called X. So follow me there at Gorgon Sports. But I got it at 52.5, dropped all the way down to 45.5 at one point this week. I think closed most places around 46.5. But whether you got it at 52, 48, 45, even if you got it all the way down at some weird odds, some great odds, alternate line at 35, you hit the under because these two teams combined for 32 points in this game. And it was really the kind of game that we expected it to be. These teams are teams that have been led by their defenses all season. And today was absolutely no different. They combined for 32 points. They combined for just over 500 yards of total offense, but Ohio State was able to find just that little bit more of a little bit more offense in this game. And I think that was really the difference. I think the difference in this game was that Ohio State had a player like Marvin Harrison, and Ohio State dealing with so many injuries. Emeka Abuka, Travion Henderson at running back, but they still had Marvin Harrison, the best wide receiver in the country, the guy who's going to be a top 10 draft pick next season, the guy who's going to be the first wide receiver off the board in the NFL draft, and Marvin Harrison was their go-to guy. Kyle McCord went to him like crazy, targeted him 16 times. He ends up with 11 catches, 162 yards, and a touchdown, and I really think that was the difference in this game, is that Ohio State has a guy like Marvin Harrison that can help them generate more in the passing game, and Ohio State ends up with 286 passing yards compared to 191 for Penn State. And I'll talk about that 191 number in just a second. But Ohio State just got a little bit more out of their passing game. They both have young quarterbacks, but Ohio State has an outstanding receiving core, including the best receiver in the country, and they force fed him. And that was kind of the difference to me. I watched this game and I just didn't see Penn State's receivers getting separation in this game. And I think that is ultimately what is going to hold Penn State back this year from being a very good team, a top 15 team, from being a college ball playoff team, a national championship contender. And you saw that today. And I think it's just simple as that. That was the difference. I was impressed with Penn State's defense. I thought it was very good. It was the offense that struggled. They go 1 of 16 on third downs. I believe their first third down conversion of the day wasn't till that last drive that was essentially meaningless. It was their best drive of the day. They go 73 yards, and it was meaningless to the final result of the game, but it wasn't meaningless to me because on my preview show, I gave out Drew Aller. I bet Drew Aller under 190.5 passing yards. Because I said, you know, look, that line, that under, that total, it's dropped so much. I got to find a different way to play this. I'm going to play the under on Drew Aller's passing yards. I expect this to be a low-scoring game. I expect it to be a run-heavy game. I don't trust Penn State's receivers a ton. Ohio State's been so good at not giving up the big play. And for 95% of the game, I was dead on with that. Ohio State's up 20-6. Penn State gets the ball back with a couple minutes to go. What was it here? Let me see if I can find the exact time remaining in the game. 2:41 to go. Aller has 118 passing yards. He leads a meaningless 73-yard drive where he had 73 passing yards to hit, you guessed it, 191 passing yards on the day. So I lose that bet by a half yard. A brutal, brutal, brutal beat. I maintain that was the right side. Those are sometimes the plays you just got to take a look back and look at and laugh, because if you don't laugh, you'll cry. And that's kind of how this game of sports gambling goes. So a really tough beat there. Leads a meaningless touchdown drive. Not a meaningless drive for those of us who bet Drew Aller under 190 and a half yards. But with 2:41 to go in the game, the guy had 118 passing yards. Penn State's passing offense was non-existent. It wasn't impressive. This whole offense wasn't impressive. They ran the ball okay. I thought they maybe could have even run the ball a little bit more, but this is not a complete and balanced offense. And credit to Ohio State's defense. It is a good defense. It's taken massive strides year over year. I think it's definitely the strength of this team, but I think Penn State's offense just isn't equipped right now to be at this level. This defense, this Penn State defense, is a national championship caliber defense, a college football playoff caliber defense, but they just don't have the offense to go with it right now. Again, I would have run the ball a little bit more. Nick Singleton and Catron Allen each had 9 carries. Singleton was running the ball really well. He had 48 yards on those 9 carries. I thought he was getting things going early, and I thought some of the play calling was interesting for them to go away from the run there. I thought that was their best shot because I just didn't see their receivers getting separation. So a really disappointing loss for Penn State. We talked about it, you know, going into this week, what this game represented for Penn State. And I can't help but feel like if you're a Penn State fan, that you leave this game feeling like, well, this is more of the same. I don't say coming out of this game like that Drew Aller is the same as Sean Clifford. I can't say that at this point. He's a real young quarterback. He did not have a good game, but I don't think his receivers helped him a ton. And I know a lot of Penn State fans were hoping and thinking that this is the reason you get a Drew Aller for games like this, but he's still a young quarterback going into a very tough road environment. He hasn't been in an environment like this, and I think it was a lot to ask him to meet that moment at this point in his career. Now, you can go back and in retrospect say, hey, should they have gone to him last year? Should they have played him, given him more opportunity to play last year, rather than, you know, lean on Clifford as much as they did? And they went to the Rose Bowl, won a Rose Bowl last year, but they lost those two games to Ohio State and Michigan. And I guess it all depends on your perspective and what you want as a fan. I don't think you trade an 11-win year and a Rose Bowl win. Like that's a huge year. That's a great year if you're a fan. But I guess if you have this mindset of it's national championship or bust, that's the only thing that matters, then yeah, maybe it's worth it to trade a 11-win Rose Bowl year for an 8-win year where you get your quarterback of the future a little bit more prepared. But I mean, there's nothing they can go back and do about that now. I don't think there's any point in speculating about that. I think it's all a matter of perspective. So I left this game feeling like Penn State's offense is just not at the level it needs to be at yet in order for them to be a true college football team in the college football playoff team in the 4-team CFP era. They didn't convert. I talked about the third downs already. They didn't convert 1-16 on third downs. They were also given an absolute gift with some good field position, and they couldn't make anything happen. The defense gets a big stop on a fourth down, in deep in their red zone. Then they punt the ball away. Ohio State turns the ball over. They get good field position. Can't do anything with it. I mean, they had almost nothing in terms of yards in the second half until that very last drive of the game. Just going through their drives in the second half, it was 16 yards punt, 2 yards punt. 9 yards punt, negative 5 yards punt, 6 yards turnover on downs, negative 22 yards turnover on downs, and then they end up with that 73-yard touchdown drive, that meaningless touchdown drive. So that was my big takeaway, is I just don't think Penn State has the playmakers on the outside, and I don't think their offense is ready to compete at that level yet. As far as Ohio State goes, it's a really big win for them, a huge win for them, dealing with all the injuries that they are dealing with. And I still wasn't super impressed with the way that they ran the ball. Mayan Williams had a decent day, not necessarily like on a yards per carry basis. He had 62 yards on 24 carries. That's 2.5 yards per carry, basically closer to 2.6 yards per carry. It's not exactly what you want or what you need. Chip Trainum has another kind of unimpressive day, 22 yards on 9 carries. So I'm still not super impressed with their run game. But again, they have Marvin Harrison and they are getting him the ball. It's kind of like basketball where you just got to get the ball to your best player sometime. And he's the guy who's carrying them on offense. And that's why you have a Marvin Harrison. I am really impressed with their defense. It's the clear strength of their team. But I do leave this game thinking that Michigan is the clear number one team in the Big Ten. I think these teams are both a little bit of a step down from Michigan right now. Now, having said that, when I think about how you rank Ohio State at this point, I don't see any way, given a road win over Notre Dame and a home win over Penn State, that this team could be anywhere outside of the top four at this point in the year. I'm a big proponent of you rank based on what a team has done, how they've looked, who they've played, who they've beaten, who they've lost to at this point in the season. Forget about preseason expectations. And Ohio State is now a 7-0 undefeated team who went on the road and beat Notre Dame and beat Penn State at home, who has been crushing everybody they've played. So I think you feel really good if you're an Ohio State fan coming out of this game that the defense is where it's at, that Marvin Harrison is Marvin Harrison, that Kyle McCord seems to be continuing to grow and mature and is smart enough to get the ball to Marvin Harrison. The running game is what you got to worry about. But I think if you feel like this team can get healthier, they are on the right track. And if they can win a game like this without Travion Henderson, without Emeka Abuka, you just kind of imagine how much better this team can get. You know, sometimes we don't talk about enough how teams grow and change as the season goes on. And it's not hard to imagine a healthy Ohio State team with this defense, with Kyle McCord that has gone through a full season and is getting better and better, and a healthy receiving core and running back room being a really, really dangerous team. I still think Michigan is the clear best team in the Big Ten to me as of right now. I know where the schedule's at, and I know there's some controversy going on right now with this sign stealing scandal, but based on what I've seen on the field, I think Michigan is the best team. Ohio State would be second, and then Penn State a clear third to me at this point. I think that might even be the better way to say it. I think Ohio State and Michigan are actually still a clear top two. Penn State is third in this conference completely by themselves. Nobody is close to them in the rest of the league, but I don't view them yet as on that same tier as Ohio State and Michigan. This was a huge chance for them to show it, and the offense kind of just showed it's not there yet. So I go 1-1 with my bets in that big Penn State-Ohio State game. And elsewhere, at the noon time slot, the other big game to talk about here is Oklahoma surviving a scare from UCF. Oklahoma wins 31-29, big favorites in this game, close most places at 17. Oklahoma's a 17-point favorite, and they don't even come close to covering that. They win by two. UCF has a 2-point conversion chance to tie the game with under a minute and a half or so left, under 2 minutes left. They go for kind of a double pass, a trick play, doesn't quite work out. They don't convert. It was an interesting onside kick. It was very close to getting an onside kick. They don't get that. And Oklahoma survives in this one. For Oklahoma, big day. on the offensive side of the ball. They go for almost 450 yards. And, you know, this is an Oklahoma team that has been getting told how great they were for 2 weeks coming off that Red River game. So I kind of feel like for them to just survive this game is kind of a win from that perspective, because it seemed for a while they were down in this game. They were down for a while in this game. They were down 23-17 in the second half, in the fourth quarter of this game, and they end up coming back scoring 14 unanswered to go up 31-23. UCF then though responds. They go on a 75-play scoring drive. They score that touchdown. They have the 2-point conversion. So I'm still not quite sure at this point, like, what does Oklahoma, what is elite about Oklahoma? Because I don't necessarily think they're a super elite offense. I don't think they're a super elite defense. I think both sides of the ball are very good, but maybe not great. Now, clearly they took their game up a level against Texas. But I think for them, this was a good, this was a kind of just survive in advance kind of game. And now they will have two very interesting games the next 2 weeks on the road. They will go on the road to Kansas, which has the potential to be a shootout, and they go to Stillwater for Bedlam. And I know it's a joke, like Oklahoma always wins Bedlam. The people always joke about anything can happen in Bedlam. It can be in Oklahoma win by a little, Oklahoma win by a lot, an Oklahoma comeback win, an Oklahoma win where they hang on by the skin of their teeth. It's kind of a joke, I know, but there is going to be some vitriol in that stadium because it's going to be the last Bedlam game for we don't know how long, and Oklahoma State's a team playing a lot better. So going to be interesting to check out the Sooners the next couple weeks in hostile environments. They haven't gone on the road for a true road game since the Cincinnati game, which was back in September. That was one that they won 20-6, and Cincinnati had chances in that game. Cincinnati, that game was close, and it could have been even closer. So it'll be interesting to watch the Oklahoma Sooners over the next couple of weeks. All right, let's move on to the 3:30 Eastern time slot. And wow, what a slate of games that took place during that slot. I mean, I was trying to watch all of them at the same time. It was like my head was on a swivel. I had three screens going. I could have used more because we had, well, let's just start here. Let's just start with what I thought was the game that I probably ended up paying attention to the most when I moved to my main screen, which was number 8 Texas surviving against the Houston Cougars on the road, 31-24. Quinn Ewers, Texas's quarterback, goes out. They don't have him for the entire fourth quarter. He gets injured in this game, and Houston almost had this one. And I think the play that everybody will be talking about for a long time in this one is Houston driving to try to tie the game late in the fourth quarter. It looked like on a third down deep in Texas territory. They had third and one at the Texas 10. It looked like they got the first down on a run, and running was not something they did very well all game long. They ended up being marked short. And the thing that was baffling to me about this is, yes, it looked like he gained the line for sure in real time and on the replays, but I'm somebody who watches college football for 12 to 15 hours every Saturday. I talk about it all week. I study it. My life is college football. My life is college sports. And I still don't understand what the replay system is, because from what I understand, everything is reviewed. Even if it doesn't necessarily go to an official review where they stop the game, everything is being looked at in the booth. But in this situation, it seems like there are so many times that games are unnecessarily stopped. And in this instance, the game wasn't stopped in a critical juncture. 7-point game, under 2 minutes to go. The game was not stopped to review this. Maybe somebody was looking at it up in the booth, but the game was not stopped and the officials didn't go over to the sideline. This game was not stopped to review this. And I don't understand how this doesn't deserve a longer look at this critical juncture of the game. So that doesn't happen. I thought it was a bad spot. I thought Houston gained the line. But either way, that brings up a 4th and 1. And on 4th and 1, Houston goes from the gun and throws the football. And I'm not here to criticize them for doing that or criticize Dana Holgorsen for doing that, because the fact of the matter is Houston could not run the football in this game. Houston was one-dimensional in this game. They did all the damage through the air in this game. They only had 14 rushing yards, and yes, that includes sacks, but there was nobody on this team who averaged more than 2.6 yards per carry. Parker Jenkins, 9 carries for 23 yards, 2.6 yards per carry. Houston could not run in this game, so I don't even blame them on that play call, because they were absolutely unable to run in this game, and I think that speaks a lot about Houston and why they're 3-4 this season, because they absolutely could not run the ball. They put up a really valiant effort, but I want to go back to why Houston was even in this game. I mean, so much went on here. It's wild. Early in this game, second quarter, Texas is dominating. They're up 21-7. They're driving down the field. They get to a 4th-and-6 situation at Houston's 26. And up 21-7, they decide to run a fake field goal. And a fake field goal where they pass to the kicker, who gets stopped, and they turn the ball over on downs. Again, at this point, they are up 21-7. They've absolutely dominated the game. Let me just run through Houston's drives so far in this game up to this point. Negative 4 yards, punt. 4 yards, punt. 13 yards, punt. 15 yards, punt. Then they do get on the board with a 71-yard drive, a four-play 71-yard drive due to a couple long passes there. That was what they had done to that point in the game. Houston or Texas was absolutely dominating this game. They had scored on their first three drives, and then they punted. So they had scored on three of their first four drives, scored touchdowns. This was their fifth drive of the game. They drive down the field, and instead of just taking the points, getting that field goal, they run a fake field goal in this situation. What does Houston do? They go down the field and they score. They cut it to 21-14. There's a ton of energy. There's a ton of emotion back in the building. And then Houston comes out in the second half and scores right away to tie the game at 21. I do not understand for the life of me why you go for a fake field goal there and give Houston any hope in this game. If you want to go for it, I can live with that. Just put your offense out on the field and go do it. You've had your way with them all game long. And I feel like in college football, things can snowball so fast, one way or another. One bad play here, one bad play there. A game that was close turns into a blowout. Or a game that is trending towards a blowout turns into a close one. And I really feel like that's what happened to Texas here. So that was kind of baffling to me. And then in the second half, Quinn Ewers gets injured on a run. He looked like he was fine. The tackler, the defender, actually looked like he was hurt. But then Ewers leaves the game, doesn't come back. And this is the moment where you're like, if you're a Texas fan, wow, thank goodness that we were able to hold on to Malik Murphy in the offseason and he didn't transfer somewhere, because that's why you need to have a solid backup quarterback. Malik Murphy ends up leading a 53-yard touchdown drive to give Texas the lead in the fourth quarter. And then that drive that I described, that scene that I described at the very beginning of this took place. And here comes my dog with his chew toy. He's just opening the door. He wants to play as I'm talking about this. So we're going to deal with that. And this is what you get with the instant reaction show. But Texas comes up with the stop there, the controversial stop there, you know, with the call at the end of the game. So this is a great game. And I got to give a lot of credit to Houston for the way they fought back in this game. And I have to give credit to Texas as well for finding a way to win even without Quinn Ewers. But I am concerned about Texas playing such a close game with a team that was so one-dimensional. This is the kind of team that I just feel like Texas should be blowing out when they hold them to 14 rushing yards, but they let them get so much through the air. That's concerning, especially when you look back at the Oklahoma game and you look at what they gave up to Dylan Gabriel and the Oklahoma Sooners. And that's obviously a very good offense, a good passing offense, but they gave up a lot through the air in that one as well. And it seems like, you know, maybe in that Alabama game, as we watch Alabama more, and we're going to get to them in just a second here, and their win over Tennessee, but it seems like we might have been a little bit fooled because Alabama does not have that passing attack that some of these teams in the Big 12 do. And it seems like that might be something that Texas is susceptible to. It seems like that might not be their strength. So Texas and Oklahoma both survive with wins today in their first game coming off Red River, and both could have easily lost the games today, but Texas does come away with a win. Oklahoma does come away with a win. I'm not going to lie. I can't say I'm feeling great about any of those Texas national championship bets after today. Texas had a chance to absolutely bury Houston in the first half. They didn't do it. They let them stick around. Quinn Ewers gets hurt. It looks like they're letting teams throw the ball on them. And I can't say I absolutely love where they are having a future national title bet on Texas after today. Now, it's just one game, obviously. They've looked very good earlier in this season, but we got to see what the Ewers injury looks like, and we got to see if they can tighten up that pass defense. Other thing today, I mean, they did run the ball. The Texas's offense did look pretty good. They ran the ball fairly well, not necessarily on a per yards per carry basis, but in that first half, they looked like they were just physically dominating Houston, and that's what just makes that decision to run that fake field goal so confusing to me. So we'll see with Texas. We'll see. I mean, I still think there's a lot to like about this team, but I don't feel as good as I did leaving the loss to Oklahoma, leaving this win over Houston today. Now let's go to that Alabama-Tennessee game, because that was the big one at this time slot coming into the week. And early on, it looked like Tennessee was really in control of this game. Tennessee goes into the half up 20-7 on Alabama. They're looking good, and Alabama puts together a second half for the ages, outscoring Tennessee 27-0. In this one. And this is kind of the Alabama performance we've seen all year, right? Jalen Milroe has a good, not great game, turns the ball over in the first half, throws a interception in the end zone, but he hits some big plays. They throw the ball down the field. They run the ball okay. It was good, not great, but their defense is really, really good. And the defense comes up with a big strip sack fumble in the fourth quarter to really put this game away, up 7. They get that sack fumble recovered and returned for a touchdown. And Alabama keeps doing just enough to win these games. Second half for the ages by the Crimson Tide here. With Alabama, I think they are a top 10 team. I don't know that they're a top 4 team. And I kind of feel the same way I do leaving the, as I talked about Penn State and Ohio State earlier today, I kind of view them like a little bit better version of Penn State. I think their offense is a little better than Penn State's, but you don't quite see that potential for the offense like you do with Ohio State, where they can really kick it into that next gear. I don't know that they have a next gear. And I think today what we're starting to see is some separation between the really top tier teams and those teams that are more top 10 to 15 type teams. And I feel like Alabama falls more in that top 10 to 15 type range here. They kind of are what they are. They're not the greatest running team. They're going to hit some shots down the field, and they have an excellent defense. And I mean, it's always great to get this win or win in a rivalry game. They're still 7-1. They absolutely are controlling the SEC West right now. But I'm starting to become a little bit more worried about when they play LSU. And if LSU tries to get them into a shootout, if LSU can get them into a shootout, and that game's in 2 weeks, it's in Tuscaloosa, can they keep up with it? I don't trust that LSU defense at all, but I mean, it's hard to trust this Alabama offense right now either. So Alabama gets the win. It's a great second half, but Alabama just doesn't look like that dominant team that we've come to expect in the Nick Saban era. Another game I want to touch on here, Oregon, the number 9 team in the country, coming off that loss to Oregon last week. They host Washington State at home. And the thing, my major takeaway from this game, Oregon wins 38-24. I am just so impressed with that Oregon rushing game. That Oregon run game is excellent. And that's the reason I still really like them and why I said I was leaning towards placing a Oregon 33, I believe it was, to one national championship bet in the middle of the week. I did put a bet on Bo Nix 30-1 to win the Heisman Trophy, because this is just is such a complete offense that I think they are going to be in this thing to the very end. And obviously the Heisman is an individual award, but it's a team award too. You got to be on a really good team. You got to have the numbers. Bo Nix has the numbers, and I think he's on a team that is going to be competing for a playoff spot until the end. But the story to me today was that running game. Oregon goes for 248 yards on the ground. They have two different 100-yard rushers in Bucky Irving and Jordan James. And unfortunately, I did lose my bet on this one. Washington State team total under 20.5 points. They score 24 points. They score a meaningless touchdown at the end of the game. But you know what? I can't feel too bad about that, because Washington State put up some yardage in this one. They put up almost 500 yards of offense in this one. So we're still trying to figure out here just how good Oregon's defense was. I thought Oregon's defense would shut them down a little bit more, as bad as Cam Ward and that offense has looked the past couple weeks against Arizona. They only put up, I think it was 6 points a week ago, and against UCLA, just 17. I expected a little bit more out of Oregon's defense today, but it's impossible not to love this Oregon offense, that running game, and what Bo Nix and those receivers bring to the table. So the Ducks get the win, 38-14. They don't cover. I believe, what did this one close at? I think it was like 20 and a half. I don't know. I think it was one that was kind of all over the place, 18.5 to 20.5. So I'm not sure what it really closed at. I'm seeing 19.5s here, 18.5, 20. Either way, if you took Oregon minus the points, you didn't cover, because Oregon wins this one by 14. And again, the Washington State scored a late touchdown that kind of blew your cover and blew that Washington State team total under 20.5 if you took that one. So those were kind of the standout big games involving big teams in that 3:30 time slot. There's a couple other games going on in that time slot that weren't involving necessarily national championship contenders, but were just good, interesting, entertaining games that came down to the wire. And one of them was the Iowa Hawkeyes finally losing a game where they just score 10 points. For the first time, PJ Fleck in Minnesota wins Floyd of Rosedale. That's the first time that PJ Fleck has won this game, that he's brought that pig home. I think that's one of the cooler trophies in college football, just a bronze pig named Floyd. That's pretty fun. But Minnesota wins this game. It looked for a split second like Iowa was going to win this one in the most Iowa way possible, with Cooper DeJean returning a punt for a touchdown down 12-10. It looked like he returned a punt for a touchdown, but they end up ruling that he called fair catch, thus negating the punt return touchdown. Iowa isn't able to do anything. They end up throwing an interception on their final possession, and the Golden Gophers get the win in Kinnick. It finally comes back to haunt Iowa, the fact that they cannot move the ball and they cannot score. 127 total yards for Iowa in this game, 116 through the air, just 11 on the ground. And Iowa really had been living on breaking big runs for touchdowns and playing defense in the previous weeks. And it finally came back to haunt them here in this one. One other performance that I want to call out at this 3:30 time slot is Oklahoma State's running back Ollie Gordon had a day to remember, as Oklahoma State moves to 5-2 with a road win over West Virginia. And Oklahoma State has now won 3 in a row. They've beaten the two Kansas teams. They've now beaten West Virginia on the road. They're 5-2 overall. 3-1 in the conference, and Ollie Gordon, every time I looked over at the screen, it seemed like he was breaking a long run for a touchdown. Ollie Gordon goes for 282 yards and 4 touchdowns. At one point in the fourth quarter, I tweeted it out, he had like 190-something yards in the fourth quarter alone. I'm sorry, 149 yards in the fourth quarter alone. And that was after his last touchdown of the day. I don't know if he added any more to that total, but a ridiculous total of nearly 300 yards by himself on the ground. He is really humming. That Oklahoma State offense seems to have figured some things out now with Alan Bowman solidified as the starting quarterback there. And Oklahoma State goes on the road and gets a really big win. And then the last game I want to mention at this 3:30 time slot is Wake Forest with their third string quarterback. A guy who had only played special teams this year goes out and gets a win, comes down to the wire against the Pitt Panthers, and they get a really big win at home. You know, this isn't a game that's going to kind of make national news or any, it's not a game that was high priority, but Wake Forest does pick up a big 21-17 win with Santino Marucci playing quarterback with their starter and their backup out. And this is one I actually kind of just flipped away from the screen. I had it on late in the game. I thought it was over. They throw an interception with a 1:03 left, but they're able to hold Pitt, force Pitt to punt. They get the ball back. They go 48 yards for the go-ahead touchdown, and Wake Forest gets a big win at home. So all of this was going on at the same time. Pretty exciting 3:30 time slot there. As far as my bets in that time slot, I went 1-1. I won Missouri -7 against South Carolina. Missouri absolutely blows South Carolina out. Great offensive performance for them on the ground and through the air. I'm starting to think, I think they are legitimately the second best team in the SEC East and the team that can give Georgia the best game there, if there's anybody that can do it. And then, of course, I lose the Washington State team total under 20.5. Okay, let's move on to the nighttime slot. And if 3:30 was a great slate of games, the night slot lived up to it as well. It was just thriller after thriller going down to the wire, with I think the biggest one being Utah, the number 14 team in the country, going on the road to the Coliseum and taking down the USC Trojans, handing USC their second loss in a row after they were dominated by Notre Dame a week ago. Utah wins 34-32 on a last second field goal. And for a while, it didn't look like it was going to come down to this. It looked like it was just another one of these games where Utah was going to get the better of USC and there wasn't really going to be any drama, much like last year's Pac-12 championship game. They did play a thriller in the regular season last year, and this one ended up being more like that one. Again, coming down to the wire, Utah hits a last second field goal, a 38 yarder as time expired to win this game. But Utah was up late, and Utah was up 28-17 in this game. They were up 31-23 and then up 31-26. They punt the ball to Zachariah Branch, who has a big punt return. It sets up a Caleb Williams touchdown run to give USC the 1-point lead. They go for the 2-point conversion, don't get it, but USC allows Utah to drive down the field and kick that field goal to get a 2-point error to win the game. And on that drive, there was certainly a controversial call. There was a targeting, roughing the passer targeting call on Bear Alexander, which that was on third down, 39 from their own 26, which was a big penalty, really kept that drive alive. But then late in the drive too, 16 seconds left, USC allows Bryson Barnes to run for 26 yards, which, you know, made that a much, much easier field goal than it otherwise would have been. And you got to give a lot of credit to Utah here for the way they have been able to find ways to win throughout the season. I mean, they're now 6-1, 3-1 in the conference, alive in the Pac-12 championship race. And as one of the former contributors to this podcast would very readily point out to you, they have Oregon at home next week. So they have a chance. They have a chance to put themselves in a really good position to make the Pac-12 championship game. Now they have lost to Oregon State already. So they got to beware of that. Oregon State will have a tiebreaker over them if they both end up as either one loss or two loss teams. But Utah, it's been impressive what they've done. His defense is excellent. They found a way to win games without their starting quarterback. Bryson Barnes has that big scramble in this game, and they're just finding ways to get things done. And it's a real credit to Kyle Whittingham, that coaching staff, and that defense, because the defense has been absolutely fantastic. And for USC, just another instance where their defense falls short. Last week against Notre Dame, I don't think you could entirely blame it on the defense. And this week, I don't think you can entirely blame it on the defense either, but it certainly didn't help. It seemed like it was much more of a flaw than it did a week ago. I thought last week the USC defense was put in just some very bad positions. And this week, you know, they had a chance to end this game. They give up a 54-yard drive that allows Utah to kick a very easy field goal, including that last run. I just can't get over that last run by Barnes that made that field goal just that much easier. I mean, you could have been looking at like a 55-yarder or so, and instead they kick an under 40-yarder. Cole Becker drills it, never a doubt, and Utah goes on the road and gets another big win over USC. And it's just a credit to, again, credit to Kyle Whittingham, a credit to that program that they have gone 6-1 without Cam Rising this season. And the next week they will have a huge game against Oregon. Another big game in this nighttime slot was a game that I bet on. And how can I not start the nighttime slot talking about this? Is that I had a very good primetime slot when it came to gambling. I won Florida State -14.5. I won Miami +3 against Clemson. And we're going to get to that game in a minute. And then with that Miami win, I also hit my money line parlay of the week +962. So for the week, I was up a little over 6.5 units +6.57 units. And that takes me to the season for this football season. In-season bets, including spread, totals, player props, money line parlays, all that good stuff that I talk about every week, I am up nearly 13 units on the season, +12.82 units. Another future did come in today, and I lost. So I've lost my Colorado future under. I've lost my Arkansas season win total over bets. Those are officially losses, but there's some big wins possibly looming out there as far as the futures are concerned. But I have lost those. I put those on my record. So -2.34 units on the futures, which brings me to a grand total of just about +9.5 units on the year, +9.48 units on the year. That arrow keeps going up and to the right. And this was a really fun night slate because these bets were on the brink and they eventually hit. I feel like it's a little bit of karma after that Drew Aller under went over and the Washington State under went over earlier in the day, but I'll take that trade any day. But let's talk about Florida State, because I think that's kind of the more impactful of the two big ACC games that took place this night. And Florida State hosted Duke. Riley Leonard ends up getting the start for Duke, and Duke came out absolutely on fire. They get off to a big 17-7 lead where they score on a pick six. They're up 10-7. They score on a pick six, and that Duke defense is absolutely flying around. And this was a real battle for Florida State, and I think it was a really impressive win for Florida State. In the second half, they dominate the game. They score 21 points in the fourth quarter. Duke really had a hard time moving the ball in the second half of this game. Riley Leonard gets injured again. Henry Bellin comes into the game. Their backup quarterback, who played last week against NC State, has not started a game on the road yet. And he and they had a really hard time in this game. There was a drive in this second half where Duke got all the way down to the Florida State 4-yard line, and Mike Elko decided to go to it. They were up 20-17 at this point. Elko decides to go for it. Fourth and three from the FSU 4-yard line. They don't get it. And then from that point forward is when FSU really put the pedal to the metal and put this game away. FSU had three more drives. They scored touchdowns on all of those drives. On Duke's next three drives, they went three plays minus 9 yards, four plays for 6 yards, and then down 38-20 with 4:15 to go. The game over. They do go 38 yards on that next drive, and time runs out in that game. So FSU really dominates that fourth quarter, and I think that's just the difference in a program right now that has the playmakers that Florida State has. I thought Duke put up a really valiant effort, a really valiant fight in this one, especially with Riley Leonard getting injured. And I'm not going to kind of do these segments individually tonight, since I'm trying something a little different here, but Duke would go down as my team that lost and I'm buying. I still am so impressed with that defense. I thought that defense really played the talented FSU receivers really well for the vast majority of that game. I'm so impressed with that secondary. I love that secondary so much. I mean, Keon Coleman only had 2 catches for 54 yards tonight. Now they spread the ball out a lot more. They got a lot more guys involved, but Keon Coleman has been one of the most impressive receivers in the country this year. And that Duke secondary was able to hold him to just 2 catches, which is really, really impressive. So I love this Duke defense. I think it all just depends on how healthy Riley Leonard can get, because when he is in the game and when he is at full health, I think they're a completely different team. And they're a team that could challenge for the ACC championship game. And I think at this point, Florida State is kind of the lock to make the ACC championship game now. If you look at the ACC standings, let me bring those up real quick. Now, Florida State moves to 7-0 overall, 5-0 in the conference. And then you have this whole glut of teams. You have Louisville at 3-1, Duke at 2-1, Virginia Tech at 2-1, and North Carolina at 3-1, because they lose to Virginia tonight at home. Virginia gets their first FBS win of the season and upsets North Carolina. And North Carolina, it kind of looked like it was going to be a Florida State North Carolina ACC championship game. We were heading down that path, and now it's a real question of who is going to be that second team in the ACC championship game. And I feel like with a healthy Riley Leonard, Duke could be it. I mean, they got a tough schedule because they have to go to Louisville and to North Carolina. So the advantage is not with them from a schedule perspective, but this Duke defense is fantastic. And I certainly a better defense than North Carolina. I think it's a better defense than Louisville. And this is certainly a Duke team that I will be buying, especially if they are next week, for example. If they're a dog, and they will be a dog to Louisville on the road, always depends on how many points you're getting. But I like this Duke team as a dog against a team that's not quite as talented as Florida State. Florida State just had too much talent for them. Florida State was just going to outlast them, especially without Riley Leonard. But I don't think the talent discrepancy is quite there when it comes to Louisville, when it comes to North Carolina. So this is definitely a Duke team I am still buying on. And we touched on that Carolina loss already, just a huge upset. And I mean, if you're a Carolina fan, I think I said it on the podcast last week. I said they will probably be 9-0. And there was no reason to think that they wouldn't be 9-0 with the upcoming schedule of Virginia, Campbell, and Georgia Tech. That was what they had to get through. That was what North Carolina had to get through to reach 9-0. And they couldn't do it. And their defense, which had been really good, it looked much improved all year, really kind of bit them in the butt today and gave up some big plays at inopportune times. This was just one of these games that it seemed like it was going to be a battle throughout. Virginia gets off to a really good start. They get up early, and Virginia's a team that they've given a lot of teams trouble this year. They've hung around, but they just haven't been able to, you know, finish the job. There's been a ton of games that they were in and they could not finish the job, and they finally got it done tonight. But the North Carolina defense, rather, you know, they gave up some long touchdown drives. Just looking at a couple of the drives here in the second half, a 74-yard touchdown drive, a 73-yard touchdown drive. And Virginia's a team that really hasn't run the ball very well this year. Well, they were able to put up 228 yards on the ground tonight against this Carolina defense. And I think if you're North Carolina, that's what's really going to hurt. That's what you're going to look at and feel like, man, how did we let this team run all over us like this? Because Virginia does have some pretty good receivers there. They have some threats on in the passing game that can do some things, but this is not a Virginia team that has been very successful with the run, and they were able to run all over North Carolina tonight. Not the greatest yards per carry, but they're putting up 228 yards. That's a big night from the run game, and I think that's what North Carolina fans, North Carolina team, North Carolina coaches are going to be kicking themselves about when they look back at this one. So a huge upset in the ACC and a really tough one for North Carolina, but you gotta be, you know, it's a feel good story for Virginia. I mean, they went through that tragedy at the end of last season. They've been through so much as a team. Tony Elliott trying to lead that program. He was in his first year as head coach as they go through this terrible tragedy with that shooting that took place. And they were off to a really tough start on the football field this year too. You know, just watching some of their early season games, they talk about how much emotion there was just being on the field, just playing, just, you know, playing a football game, going to practice. There was so much emotion around it, and they lose to James Madison. They're right there with Maryland. Maryland kind of ends up blowing them out. They lose a heartbreaking one to NC State, one of the wackiest games you'll see. They lose a close one to Boston College. And for them to get this win, it does have to make you feel good for Tony Elliott and those guys, you know, given everything that they've been through and just how emotional this year has been. You know, of course, winning football games doesn't bring those guys back. Nothing does, but it's just with how much they've been through and how much they've put into still playing football. It's just really nice for them to get a win. It's a feel good win for that Virginia program there. So big upset in the ACC tonight. The ACC kind of took center stage outside of this USC Utah game tonight, because then Miami and Clemson go down to the wire in overtime, and Miami ends up starting a backup quarterback. Tyler Van Dyke is out. Emery Williams is in. And into the second half, this looked like it was just going to be a game that Clemson ground out, another low-scoring affair where they just kind of got the job done, relied on their defense. Their defense carried the day, and they would do just enough on offense to win it. They're up 17-7 in this game late in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter, and Miami responds with a really nice touchdown drive that ends with an Emery Williams touchdown to Colby Young. Great play by Colby Young to cut this lead to three. Then Miami goes and gets the ball back, forces a three and out, drive down the field, looking like they might have a chance to score a touchdown and take the lead. They settle for a field goal, which ties the game. Then they get the ball back one more time. I really didn't like Mario Cristobal's management of this at the end of the game here. I thought they had a chance to, you know, push it a little bit and try to go for a win, but I guess he was not trusting his backup quarterback here. Emery Williams wanted to play it a little safer. They go to overtime. The teams trade field goals in the first overtime. Miami scores a touchdown and gets the two-point conversion in the second overtime. And then on a fourth down, Miami stops Cade Klubnik. Cade Klubnik runs to the outside. They wrap him up. Game over. Hurricanes win. I win my Miami +3 bet. I win my money line parlay of the week. And it was a really big win for Miami, given what they have been fighting through ever since losing that Georgia Tech game. So, you know, they're 5-0 going into that Georgia Tech game. They look like they're, or I'm sorry, they're 4-0 going into that Georgia Tech game. They look like they're about to move to 5-0. They go and they lose that game. Then they go on the road to Chapel Hill and they come out really well, but ultimately lose that game. And they had a real chance, especially with Tyler Van Dyke out, to just go in the tank and kind of call it a season. But it looks like Miami really is fighting through this and has a chance to have a really good year. And they're, you know, they have two conference losses, but they're certainly not out of that race. And even if they don't end up making the ACC championship game, they still have a chance to win 8 or 9 games. Maybe, I mean, if they run the table, 10 games. So I thought I saw a lot from Miami really the last 2 weeks, just the way they fought, the way they came out against North Carolina, then the way they fought back here with a backup quarterback. And really nice job by them on the ground tonight. That was the most impressive part of their offense to me. They really, you know, relied a lot on that. But then also their receivers, they have so much talent on the outside with those receivers. And Kobe Young came up with some big catches. He was kind of their go-to guy tonight. Xavier Restrepo had a few as well. Not the big explosive plays, but he had a couple important catches here or there. So I think this Miami team is very talented, and I think they're very close to putting it all together. And if it was not for bad game management against Georgia Tech, this team would be 6-1, and I think we'd be talking about them a lot differently. So a really nice win for Miami here. And then from a Clemson perspective, I mean, it's kind of fitting that they lose this game because they can't score in the red zone, because that's been the story for Clemson all year. The story for Clemson all year has been mistakes and not converting opportunities into points. And it's concerning for Clemson. The way this offense looks is absolutely concerning for Clemson. And, you know, we thought with bringing in Garrett Riley from TCU that we were going to see major changes in this offense, and that this offense was just going to be, it was going to be kind of like magic. He was going to sprinkle some pixie dust on it, and it was going to be a great offense again. And it just hasn't been. Clemson, they don't seem like they have it on offense. They haven't seemed like they have it on offense all season. And this defense is still a very good defense, but the offense has to give them more. They have to get more from the offense. And, you know, we thought that the running attack, the rushing game of Clemson would be what they could kind of lean on from an offensive perspective. But tonight, Will Shipley, 15 carries for 44 yards. Phil Maffa, 5 carries for 14 yards. And it's not good enough. They're not getting enough from this offense. And I think any Clemson fan would be lying if they said they weren't disappointed with what they've seen from Clemson so far this year. And now Clemson loses its third game of the year, sitting at 4-3. They still have games with Notre Dame. They still have games with North Carolina. And then they end the year with their rival, South Carolina, on the road. And South Carolina's not having a great year, but they lost that game last year. So Clemson, you know, Dabo talked a lot earlier in this week about the fans and the expectations that Clemson fans have developed over the years with all the success that they've had. And, you know, he's right, because I constantly say, I think Dabo Swinney has done one of the most amazing coaching jobs in all of college football, because Clemson is not a historical power. They are a very good program historically, but they are not Alabama, Michigan, Notre Dame, Ohio State historically. They are not a program that has been constantly good over decades and decades like Oklahoma has. If you look at almost any decade, Oklahoma has been very good. If you look at almost any decade, Ohio State has been very good. That's not Clemson. And I always think it's so impressive what he did there. And now he's got to figure out how to regroup and how to get it going again, because I think that's what makes the great coaches really great. If you look at the basketball side, Coach K, in so many different eras, figured out how to win and win at the highest level. We didn't win national championships. You know, you look at the way he adapted to the one done era and he was able to get it done there. That's so impressive to me. You look at Nick Saban and what he's done over the course of his career and how many eras he's been able to win and win at the highest level. And I think for Dabo Swinney, you know, going out and getting Garrett Riley, that was a very good move. And I thought that showed a lot, because he's been a guy who's been he's wanted to keep it very tight, very in the family. And I thought that showed a lot. Now, the next question, of course, and we don't need to rehash this all night, is how is he going to use the transfer portal? How is he going to shift his philosophy? Because Clemson on the offensive side of the ball right now just does not seem like it has what it takes. It doesn't seem like it has the necessary guys to be a really, really good offense. And I think it all depends, you know, what the priorities are. If the priorities for Dabo Swinney are to win national championships, and I can't imagine they are anything but that, given what he's built there, what he's done, the kind of competitor he is, then he's going to have to figure out how to bring in more talent to Clemson, the kind of talent that they can put in the NFL and win national championships with. So a very disappointing game for Clemson, a very disappointing season for Clemson. And it's just, you know, it feels like everybody's always in such a hurry to declare Alabama dead. The Alabama dynasty is over. And I think with Clemson, I think it's fair to say whatever Clemson had built, that era of what Clemson did, that era of what they had, is over. He might be able to start something new. They, in a couple of years, might be winning national championships again. But I think that will be a completely new era in Clemson history, given that I think this will be, I believe this will be the third year in a row now that they have not made the college football playoff. Because, because it would be 20, they made it in 2020, they lost that game to Ohio State, so it would be 2021, 2022, 2023. And this is the third year in a row they've lost at least three games. They lost three games in each of the last 2 years. They will lose at least three games this year. And when you look back, they went through this stretch between 2015 and 2020 where they never lost more than two games in a season. And so I think it's very fair to say that stretch, that 2015 through 2020 run, was its own run. That's when they won their two national championships. That's when they played in two more national championships. And I think now they've entered a new phase, and they got to figure out how to get to that next phase. And you know, for them, hopefully it's getting back to winning national championships if you're a Clemson fan. So the ACC really played a big role in this primetime slate tonight. There are a few games still going on out there, and there's one big one that I have my eye on, and it's Arizona State. As I record this, it's 12:45 a.m. Eastern time. Arizona State up 7-3 on Washington in the third quarter. And Washington, of course, is coming off that big win over Oregon. And I think they played their worst half of the season in this first half at home against Arizona State. Michael Penix was picked off two times. They're moving the ball a little bit, but the turnovers have absolutely killed them. They have a couple fumbles, they have a couple interceptions, and they've turned the ball over four times in the first half. And that's obviously not a recipe for a win. So, you know, if Washington is as good as we all think they are, they'll rebound in the second half here, and they'll blow away an Arizona State team that's not very good. That's 1-5. But that is one interesting game that's left on the docket for tonight. Probably won't wrap up till like 2 a.m. Eastern time. So wasn't going to stay up and just wait for that one to be done to record all of this. Figured I would talk about the primetime slate, get it out there, and get this to you all. As far as one more thing I do want to talk about tonight, a team that won that I'm selling. So the team that lost that I'm buying is Duke. A team that won that I am still selling on is Mississippi State. They get a 7-3 win over Arkansas today. And you know what? Any win in the SEC is a good win, especially when you're one of those teams kind of fighting for bowl eligibility, fighting to stay out of the bottom of the barrel in the SEC. And this was a huge one for Mississippi State to move them to 4-3. And they got a tough schedule, and it is going to be a challenge for them to reach a bowl game with this schedule. But they get the win today, and I don't mean to diminish this win because it is a good accomplishment. It is big, but I just still view this as an offense that I cannot trust. And Arkansas's, I trust even less. Mississippi State, these two teams combined for 405 total yards of offense today, 205 for Mississippi State, 200 for Arkansas, only 85 through the air for Mississippi State. And this is just a team that I just do not trust this offense. They have Auburn next week. And I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of viewing this one like a, like an Iowa game. Like if you give me a total in the 40s, I feel like I have to take the under on that one. Then they have Kentucky the week after, A&M the week after that. I mean, I just don't see them being able to really score on these defenses. So a good win for Mississippi State, a big one. It's always good to get a win, but if, you know, from a gambling perspective, trying to look for value here, and I just see Mississippi State as an offense that I cannot trust in the SEC moving forward. That's our show for today. Until next time, keep the grill hot and the cooler cold.